But what we're doing today, what we want you to do is be able to gauge your year to so that you can shape the year to come. We're going to use Solomon's writing in Ecclesiastes to help us to do that. And how's your year been? All good? You got your cards, 0 to 10? You probably think of a figure there somewhere. As someone said, our next year, 2019, is going to be defined by three people: Donald Trump, Theresa May, and President Xi Jinping. They reckon our year is going to be defined by the decisions that they make, which is an interesting concept. And I like looking at also words, what words have been used over this last year. And remember, Riley taught us about, well, some of you didn't need teaching, about FOMO, fear of missing out. There's another word introduced during the year, which is called JOMO. So when somebody used the word FOMO, which is, you know, fear of missing out, then there's also the joy of missing out. So when you get an invitation to a party, instead of, you know, not wanting to miss out, you can just reply and say, no, I'm sitting at home tonight, JOMO. Joy of missing out. There's another one called adulting. And they reckon this was created by the millennials. And adulting is the idea of describing any activity or duties or activities associated with what it is to being grown up. And what the way it works is how it's used is that I cannot be bothered adulting today. So in other words, someone who is the adult, given a situation in relation to responsibilities or activities, chooses not to be like an adult in that situation. So that's adulting. There's another one called salty, which, you know, it's not when you get out of the ocean, you're feeling a bit salty. If you're a bit cheesed with someone or you're feeling a bit negative, someone's feeling a bit salty towards you, that's another word that's been tossed around and used a lot this year as well. You might have noticed, actually it's just in the news, there was a young Queenslander, did you read about it, in his 20s, from Hervey Bay, just won $10 million. And so guess what he's going to do? He's going to retire in his 20s. Now, is that everyone's dream? What you, if I were to ask you what's your retirement date, someone asked me the other day. Not sure if that was a good thing or not, or what they were implying. So he's in his 20s now. He's got uber amounts of money, and he is figure, I don't have to work anymore, so he's going to retire. You know, the pursuit of stuff. What I want to do this morning by considering Ecclesiastes and Solomon's life, who had everything, he had all the toys you could ever want. What was his conclusion at the end of his days? What are some words of wisdom from Solomon that can help us look back into our past year and look forwards into our next year? So our last year, we gauge this year that we're in now and this year that's passing in order to shape our coming year by viewing some words of Solomon. And to do that, we're looking at Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1 through 14. It goes like this. By the way, I love the way what he does. He actually speaks to the young and to the old. He defines neither age. So they reckon middle age is 60 now, so old is somewhere north of there and young is somewhere south. Don't let the excitement of youth cause you to forget your Creator. Honor Him in your youth before you grow old and say, life is not pleasant anymore. Remember Him, that's God, before the lights of the sun, moon, and stars is dim to your old eyes and rain clouds continually darken your skies. Remember Him before your legs, the guards of your house. He uses this imagery of a house. Start to tremble. Before your shoulders, the strong man, stoop. Remember Him before your teeth, your few remaining servants. Stop grinding And before your eyes, the women looking out through the windows see dimly. See, he's going through all of our facets. Remember him before the door to life's opportunities is closed and the sound of work fades. Now you rise at the first chirping of the birds, in other words, you can't sleep, but then all their sounds will grow faint. You're going deaf. Remember him before you become fearful of falling and worry about the danger in the streets, before your hair turns white like an almond tree in bloom. Isn't that lovely? I won't look anywhere. So you can go home and say to someone, your hair is looking like an almond tree in bloom, and I think you're lovely. And you drag along without energy like a dying grasshopper. And the caperberry no longer inspires sexual desires. In the ancient world, the caperberry was like an aphrodisiac. Remember him before you near the grave, your everlasting home, when the mourners will weep at your funeral. Yes, remember your creator now while you are young, before the silver cord of life snaps and the golden bowl is broken. Don't wait until the water jar is smashed and at the spring and the pulley is broken at the well. For then the dust will return to the earth, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Everything is meaningless, says the teacher. Completely meaningless. Keep this in mind. The teacher was considered wise, and he taught the people everything he knew. He listened carefully to many proverbs, studying and classifying them. The teacher sought to find just the right words to express truths clearly. The words of the wise are the cattle prods, painful but helpful. Their collected sayings are like a nail-studded stick with which a shepherd drives the sheep. But, my child, let me give you some further advice. Be careful, for writing books is endless, and much study wears you out. Tried to convince our lecturers of that, but they didn't take to it. That's the whole story. Here now is my final conclusion. You know when someone has lived a full life and they've got something that they just want to say to you at the end of their life? This is it. And he says, fear God and obey his commands. God will judge us for everything we do, including every secret thing, whether good or bad. Father, help us as we look at this text through both young and old eyes and somewhere in between, wanting to understand the intent of Solomon and that period of life where he was, and also your word into our life today, so that we can gauge our lives in this year to set us up for where we will be into the coming year. We need you to be a part of this conversation. So open our hearts and minds to your spirit, I pray. Amen. The key text here for us is that one in verse 13. Here now is my final conclusion. Fear God and obey his commands, for this is everyone's duty or responsibility. Some of you remember long enough back to your school days, maybe, where you might have studied Ernest Hemingway. Ernest Hemingway was a writer. He was also a war hero at the age of 19 in the First World War. In the Second World War, he was a war correspondent. He won a Pulitzer Prize. He won the Nobel Prize, and a successful novelist. His first novel was The Sun Also Rises, which he published when he was only 27 years old, which was very young. He was also a big game hunter. He lived life to the full. He traveled a lot. He was a deep sea fisherman, and he had this strange interest in bullfighting as well. He lived a full life. But amidst all of that success and fullness, there was this emptiness that that was just deep within him. He drank a lot. He had four marriages. and he took his own life, even though he had everything that was there for him. And that story is repeated. And when we come to Solomon, he didn't take his life, but he reflects about all of the things that he had and his stuff and who he was, and got to a point in his life where he said, all of this is meaningless. Now, it can be a fairly depressing sort of a book. In fact, you're thinking at the moment, how are you going to come up from this? It's just sort of been a downward spiral. Well, Solomon writing about this, and some of you may be familiar with the old King James, or where it uses the word vanity, where vanity of vanity, all is vanity under the sun. New Living Translation turns it around to meaningless. All this stuff is meaningless. And so centuries before Hemingway was Solomon, who at the end of his life would write about this reflection. And by the way, it's not just picking up one chapter of Ecclesiastes. It starts in verse 2 of chapter 1, where he simply says, everything is meaningless. That's the way the book starts. You know how you read the first chapter of a book, and if you don't get through the first chapter, it's not going to get much further? Ecclesiastes is like that. Verse 2, he says, it's all meaningless. Forget about it. So, but he wants us to read further and further. And so he talks about things like work and wisdom and pleasure and material things and righteousness outside of God. All of those things outside of God are worthless. He lists some off. He begins to talk about pleasure in Ecclesiastes, chapter 2, verse 1 through 3. I said to myself, come on, let's try pleasure. Let's look for the good things in life. But I found that this too was meaningless. So I said, laughter is silly. What good does it do to seek pleasure? And after much thought, I decided to cheer myself with wine. And while still seeking wisdom, I clutched at foolishness, and in this way, I try to experience the only happiness most people find. It's just an empty line. He tried pleasure. Then he hits on accomplishments. Same chapter. I also tried to find meaning by building huge homes for myself and by planting beautiful vineyards. I made gardens and parks and filling them with all kinds of fruit trees, and I built reservoirs to collect the water and to irrigate with many flourishing groves. Again, this is in the context of meaninglessness. There's this idea of power in verse 9. So I became greater than all who had lived in Jerusalem before me, and my wisdom never failed me. So even he found power, and he was one of the most powerful people in the then known world. And then also hard work. Anything I wanted, I would take. I denied myself no pleasure. I even found great pleasure in hard work, a reward for all my labors. And yet even in hard work, he would find emptiness outside of God. And he went on, he talks about in verse 11, he says, as I looked at everything I had worked so hard to accomplish, it was also meaningless, like chasing the wind. There was nothing really worthwhile anymore. You ever sat by somebody in a bed in a hospital and a terminal, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that they spent all of their life on that really didn't matter anymore? It was just meaningless. That's where Solomon is at, in the sense that, adding to that, all of this stuff that he had lived his life in the midst of and again outside of God was meaningless for him. And so as he reflects on this, we can also do that as well. Again, many would suggest that Solomon is at the end of his life, and he reflects on his accomplishments and his failures. His conclusion is like this: life, however you choose to live it, without God, is meaningless. Life, however you choose to live it, without God, is meaningless. It wasn't all bad. Thankfully, he begins to look up. verse 24 through 26. So I decided there is nothing better than to enjoy food and drink and to find satisfaction in work. And then I realized that these pleasures are from the hand of God. See, he brings work, pleasure, an acknowledgement of that, because these are actually from God. Without God, these things are meaningless. For who can eat or enjoy anything apart from Him? God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy to those who please Him. So we want to gauge your year in order to shape the coming year. And the tool for doing this is just some statements, and then we're going to give you a tool to take home and do some more work while you're on holidays. That'd be good? First thing He tells us to do is simply remember God. You see that back in the start of the reading that we had, where He says, and it's repeated over and over, it says, remember Him, that's God, before the light of sun, moon, stars, remember Him before your legs start to tremble. Remember, and it's repeated over and over, remember Him, remember Him. Now, we've just been reflecting on these four aspects of God being here. And it's, you know, often we remember God when we're in a valley. We remember Him when we're in a wilderness. Or we remember Him when we're in a storm. Why? Because we need God. So we often remember Him there, but it's not that sort of remembering. It's not sort of a mental referral that we're making. It's not just thinking about God, but it's the idea of revering God. It's the idea of serving Him. It's the idea of taking up His laws and living faithfully. One writer says, the call to remember is not simply an invitation to a mental act, but an invitation to commitment. It's not just an invitation to a mental act, I need to remember God, but it's an invitation to a commitment. It's like a parallel to Matthew's words, or writing in Matthew chapter 6, seek first the kingdom of God, or seek the kingdom of God above all else, and live righteously, and He will give you everything that you need. It is including God in all aspects of your life. Remember Him. Paul says in Romans 12, verse 1 and 2, so, dear brothers and sisters, I plead with you to give your bodies to God because of all that He has done for you. Let them be a living and holy sacrifice, the kind He will find acceptable. This is truly the way to worship Him. That's remembering Him. That's revering God. And it's in that revering God, you're worshiping God, and you're bringing all that you are to Him as an act of worship. And then you have verse 2, where He talks about don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let your mind be transformed. It's that metamorphosis, renewing of the mind, so that you'll know what God's will is for you, which is good and willing, good and pleasing and perfect. So He calls us, first of all, to remember God, whatever age that we are. So in the area of our wealth, remember God in that. Worship God in our wealth, in our accomplishments. Include God in the things that we do, in our positions of power. If you're in a workplace, or you're in some setting of where you're in power, then understand that God allows you to be there and invite Him into that relationship, that work setting that you're in. All of those things that we look at, the area of pleasure. You know, you're in Victor Harbor, so there's lots of things to enjoy while you're down here. Pleasurable food. There's some great kayaking to be done as well if you want to do that. But invite God into your pleasure and include Him in that, all of those areas. And the encouragement for us is to do that when you're young. Notice what He says here. Basically, don't wait till you get old and waste a life filled with pleasure, wealth, power, accomplishment, but without God. Don't wait till you're old till you remember God. Do that in your youth. That's why I love working with young people. That's why I love what Riley and our children's team do here and other people in other places. I hope where you do church during the year, you've got people that are there encouraging our young people to remember God when they're young. Because the older you and I get, the more stubborn we get. The harder it is to change. We just get in concrete, and there's something about a heart that is... When we're getting older, it's harder to make changes. And if you're living your life independently from God, then in your latter years, to the expectation to hand over you to your life to God becomes harder. So the encouragement here is remember God in your youth. Don't live your life without God. In your pleasure, in your wealth, in your power, in your accomplishments, all of those things. Don't wait till you're old. Because as he's described, old age, at whatever age that is somewhat difficult, isn't it? We don't hear as well. We can't see as well. We're worried about falling over. All of those things. He says, when you're young, remember God. And then he says, in your old age, remember God and be thankful. So there's something here for everyone. In your old age, you still need to remember God. Remember God and be faithful. And he says in 11 verse 8, he says, when people live to be very old, let them rejoice in every day of life. But let them also remember there will be many dark days. In your old age, remember every day and rejoice in every day. That's what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, don't worry about tomorrow. Be anxious for nothing. Don't worry about tomorrow. There's enough about today to worry about. And Solomon says, rejoice in today. You've got today. Enjoy it for all it is. Invite God, remember God, reverence God in today, in your old age, because you know some days are just going to be really hard. That hip's going to ache, the dicky knee's going to play up, the arthritis is going to be really sore, all of those things in our old age. But the sooner we learn to walk with God and enjoy Him, the better. Because as he describes, old age can be dark and dismal. So after reflecting on all that life has to offer, Solomon concludes that things like wealth, pleasure, accomplishments, power, all of those things without God are meaningless. They won't provide your soul with anything. You might have some fun for a while, but he says include God in all of this, and do this when you're young. The decisions that you're making now as young people, include God into those decisions. And if you've waited all of life and have not remembered God in your old age, now is the time to start. You may have sat in churches like this your entire life, and you don't have a relationship with God. We've just celebrated Christmas. Christ came into the world so that we can have life and have it abundantly, to live it to the full. Whether it's in our wealth or our pleasure or our accomplishments or whatever else it might be, He brings meaning into all of those things and a relationship with the God that is our Creator. So in your old age or in your youth, remember God. Now, the Westminster Confession of Faith, the Catechism asks a lot of questions. The first question, and if we've got some good Presbyterians with us, they'd be able to tell me, is man's chief end is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. Aren't you guys up on your catechism? The question is, what is the chief end of mankind? It is to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. And there in that that question and in that answer, the writers of the Catechism bring piety and pleasure together to glorify God and enjoy Him forever. So what I want you to do is, in those areas that I mentioned, is to glorify God in your wealth. What does that look like for you? Glorify God in your accomplishments. Glorify God in your pleasure. All of those. And to enjoy Him in the midst of those things. Then you'll find real fulfillment. Looking back over the last 12 months, what does glorifying God and enjoying Him forever look like for you? So here's the exercise. We've got Terry and a few people are going to hand out some sheets of paper. And you're going to take this home with you. It's a little tool by Rod Edmondson. It's a little bit edited and adjusted. And you can ask yourself 5 questions. So over the holiday break or over January, you might take an hour or 2 hours to look through this, talk with your husband or your wife, your partner, or even as a family today. Looking back over the year, what was great about that? And then the little addendum to that is, what made it great? What made it great? That helps you to understand a little bit. So out of your year, what were some highlights? And then also, what wasn't great out of your year? Name some things. It might be something that's draining you personally. It might be your finances. All sorts of things. It might be your health. It might be a relationship that just is not great. Then what can be improved? Think about some of those things. It might be about making a relationship better. Taking responsibility in some stuff. I've seen couples who are ready to walk away from each other who got to this point and in conversation have looked at what they have and what can be improved, and they've been working on that and they're still working on that and they're working harder at that because they're willing, because they look, this is something important. What can be improved? The other side of that is the action plan. What can you do with that? Maybe what do I need to stop? And you see underneath all of these as you get your sheets. Anyone not got a sheet yet that wants one? Still some sheets going around. We got any left from the top there, Stevie? We need some more up the front. You see under there they're in 5 categories. Your spiritual, physical, relational and personal. So look through these 5 questions and then those 5 areas. Some say, oh yeah, what about you haven't got my health there or my mental health. That comes under personal, so if you want to deal with that there. What do I need to stop? What do I need to start? And again, on these sorts of ones, you look at an action plan in relation to that. So again, this morning, what I've wanted to do is for you to gauge your year in order to shape your coming year. Solomon's helped us in that. He said, all of these things that we invest so much of our lives in, without God, is futile. It's meaningless. Include God in that, and we glorify Him, and we actually enjoy Him and life forever. Amen?